What's going on, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the State of the Nova Nation podcast presented by BU Hoops. I'm Emma Houghton, he's Pat Zhang, and it is that time of year. We're so excited. We are recording this the night before the madness starts. Obviously, of course, unfortunately, Villanova is not in the madness this year, but there's still a lot of Big East storylines, Villanova women's basketball storylines that we're really excited to talk about a little bit later on today and this season. Pat, of course, we're going to spend this episode breaking down Villanova's 62-57 first round NIT loss to the Liberty Flames. And I think we have to lead off with the title because you just popped it on me and I absolutely loved it. So just take it away from here.
I'm impressed by your positivity that you come out here with how excited you are, because I'm still a little down from Tuesday night, though, of course, it'll be exciting to watch all the action start up on Thursday. But no, the title of this, and I knew it while watching that game last night, just going to be flaming out because, of course, losing to the Liberty Flames, end of the season, all that, it just fit too well. And I love a good little pun, if you haven't been able to pick up on that through the many titles that we've given since we took over a year ago. I always try and have fun with those. This isn't a fun one, but at least it's fitting.
No, I'm not trying to take on a holier-than-thou attitude or anything like that, but as soon as Justin Moore and Cam Whitmore were having any sort of doubts, I know that you and I both tried to be very prudent about the fact that they hadn't been decided out by the time that we were recording on Tuesday night. But as soon as those expectations started to set and we knew that we were going to be getting the early season version of Villanova without their two best players, my expectations reset. And yes, I would have loved for them to win this game. I think that's true for literally everybody listening. But Liberty was a really good team. And the focus, I think, started to shift on giving the younger guys time, letting Caleb Daniels and Brandon Slater play their last game in a Villanova uniform. This obviously is not a positive feel-good episode because it is the last game of Villanova season. But I think, again, something we struggled with all season long is level-setting expectations for this team. And the squad that they went out with put up a good fight, but I don't know if they could be favored in any game in this NIT tournament.
Yeah, and just to level set too for this episode, of course, there are many questions about the season that just happened and the future of Villanova. We are going to hit those on Tuesday's episode, kind of our season in review for us here. This is going to be more recappy and NCAA tournament, but so more content coming. If you don't hear us fully go in on it now, it's because it's coming next week. So don't worry about that.
Yeah, you know, we needed some more time to think about it.
Yeah.
We listeners to think about it.
Yeah. Just time to digest and really prepare for that and be able to give our full blown out thoughts at that point, rather than a bit of the emotion for the frustration for flaming out on Tuesday night. But, you know, you start with Justin Moore and with Cam Whitmore not playing and officially not playing then on Tuesday. What was your reaction to that? Because we saw split reactions on Twitter and such of people that were upset, people that are understanding. I feel pretty firmly in my boat, but I'm curious where you fall.
Yeah, I was initially disappointed when I saw the news and honestly surprised, because I think I've made this very clear on and off the podcast. I was going into the NIT tournament thinking that Villanova was going to give it their all and really try to run this thing through. And not that they didn't do that, but obviously not having your two best players play significantly hampers those expectations. I don't think any of us have any right to question what's in the best interest for Cam Whitmore and Justin Moore, two players that more likely than not will not be in Villanova's program next year. You cannot fault them for putting their futures up front. I think we can actually give credit to Justin Moore specifically coming back from an extremely serious injury, not fully 100%, and giving it his all for the final 10 games down the stretch, whatever it ended up being. And then Cam Whitmore knowing that he was going to be the lottery pick and playing all season long through that thumb injury at the beginning of the season too. So I don't think any of us have the right to judge their decision at all. I think you can be disappointed, but when it comes down to it, they're going to put their best interest first. And that's what they did.
I think it's totally fair to be disappointed, because we were all disappointed when Cam and Justin weren't going to play, with Cam, the university cited an eye injury, and Justin, I believe, was just general soreness. But I do not think it is fair at all to be angry at these kids. I mean, take it with Justin Moore, a guy that has given everything to this program the last couple years and has turned into such a wonderful player for Villanova. has battled so hard just to even make it back and turn this team into a top 50 team in the country since he returned, which is what analytically they have been since he came back. If he wants to pursue a professional career, does playing a game at Liberty in the NIT really help facilitate that? I don't think so. And then for Cam, you know, we know everything about Cam at this point. He's going to be a lottery pick. He's going to be the first one and done for Villanova since Tim Thomas in the late 90s here. It just makes sense for him to protect himself and sit out. I have no issue about him thinking about his future and the millions of dollars he's about to walk into in a couple of months. So I'm not mad at all at either of them.
Yeah, it's disappointing, obviously, but the point about Justin is a really good one, too. On the flip side, if he doesn't play, is his legacy at Villanova really affected because of that? And the answer is also no.
It's so, the NIT, not at all.
That pretty much. It's the question you asked me on Tuesday of whether our scope of the season, our perspective on this season has changed based on if Villanova wins or loses in the first round of the NIT. And the answer was also no to that one. So the stakes were low. It would have been nice to see them make a little bit of a run. It stinks that the season is over and it stinks for them to go out like that. But I don't think you can be mad based on those decisions alone.
Yeah, for me, it was, okay, Villanova puts a couple wins together and we see this promising run from, you know, an Armstrong, a Hawes, and a Patterson, Longino, et cetera. All right, then you can start to feel good. But if they dropped, especially the way they did on Tuesday, I don't think any less of the season than I already did after this game. So look back, perception did not change at all after the crash out there on Tuesday night.
Totally. So Pat mentioned, we needed, honestly, this is the true explanation here. We needed more time to get our thoughts together. We're going to give the weekend to talk about the season recap. We also are going to make this as question-based as possible on Tuesday's episode. So start thinking about all of your end-of-season questions, future questions that you have about Villanova's program, and we'll send that tweet out at SONNpod in the next few days so you can get your mailbag questions in. But Pat, you mentioned Trey Patterson, and he was the most significant omission in the lineup here as we transition into some of the game action here. Hosn had 15 minutes. Armstrong started, which I was really excited about.
He
played 35 minutes, tied for second on the team behind Caleb's 39 minutes.
Didn't love
Arch only played 12. So you definitely see the trajectories changing for the young guys versus Arch. But I was shocked to not see Patterson play. Did you feel the same way there?
For me, it means one thing, and that he is on his way out. Because otherwise, how does that make any sense for Trey Patterson in a game that is a wonderful opportunity to give a guy some run and see what he can do in, you know, a postseason game and all of those things? He doesn't play a single minute in that game, and it's just a seven-man team. I think that is writing on the wall that we are going to hear a transfer out over the next couple days here. If not, I would honestly love to hear an explanation, because it just doesn't make sense if that's not the end result, right?
No, this was the perfect opportunity to play the younger guys. I was thinking earlier today, because I was along the same thoughts as you, comparing it to the Angelo Breezy situation where you saw him sitting in situations that he probably would have played, and then you heard the news. And then I was comparing it to Brian Antoine's situation, because if Trey Patterson does transfer, I think everybody's resounding thoughts will be, it just stinks that it didn't work out for him at Villanova, and we wish him the best of luck. I think the biggest difference is that Antoine flashed a ton of potential, and injuries were what hampered him at Villanova. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, in Patterson's case, I think it was just a lack of fit in the program. He just really wasn't able to get his legs underneath him, play enough time, do enough to prove that he earned minutes in this rotation. And it's disappointing, because I think we did all see it at points and we hoped that he could be the X factor year after year after year, and it just never clicked. So it's not shocking. It's a bummer for sure.
It really is. I think it's definitely a point of acclimation for him that it never clicked in this Villanova system. He had opportunities, you know, to be able to break in, especially this year with a bit of a lack of wing depth. And when Cam Whitmore was down at the beginning of the season, he just wasn't able to carve it out. And then by the point it got later in the season, he was just buried on the bench there. So I hope, or I say, I guess there's a chance that he's back, of course, and you think he would have every opportunity again to crack the rotation after a season and off season where there's going to be a ton of turnover here, but it feels like this is the clearest sign that he will not be here because he did not factor into a single minute.
Otherwise, it's a confusing decision.
Definitely. Yeah, otherwise it just doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. Let's focus on probably the one positive to come away from this game. We'll get it out of the way here. It's Mark Armstrong. 35 minutes, like I mentioned. Starting in that role, 12 points, 6 for 11 from the field. I loved the way that he worked on ball, facilitating the offense, and also off ball. He is so efficient with the basketball. He's able to peel through those defenses so quickly with so much power. You see the dunks for a guy of his size. I think it surprises me every single time, but he really is so smart with the basketball. And I think you've seen huge strides from him. If nothing else can take away from this season, and you've heard Neptune talk about him as well in this same way, the way he handled the ball at the beginning of the season versus the way he's handling the ball now, the turnovers went down, the IQ went up, the comfortability went up, and he is somebody to absolutely get excited about. He was never the other freshman at Villanova, but now he has seriously carved a role for himself. Yes, they still need a point guard in the portal, but Armstrong is going to be a lethal member of the rotation. And I also want to say score for Villanova next year.
They need a point guard in the portal, but they need a point guard in the portal to supplement Mark, not to...
That's a good distinction.
Yeah, not to take minutes over Mark, because going into 2023-24, the keys to the program should be handed to Mark Armstrong. And I firmly believe that that is your positive from Tuesday, is you saw even more flashes from Mark in that extended time where he looked really good bringing the ball up. The issue is that he can still be a little loose with it, especially when he's dribbling in the lane. I have confidence that with time, that'll be able to get worked out in his game. But he did a nice job facilitating the offense. Defensively, that anticipation is something that I'm not sure you can teach, and he most certainly has it. We know about all the physical gifts when it comes to speed and athleticism. So I'm very, very pumped for what we saw with Mark Armstrong, and I'm even more excited for the player I believe he can turn into. And, you know, we discussed the priorities here and how important the transfer portal is going to be and bringing guys in and all of that, and that's totally right. But right up there, potentially number one, should be re-recruiting Mark Armstrong and making sure he has the confidence that Villanova is the place for him, because he is the next guy. He is the guy for Villanova to build around going forward, and they just got to keep him.
And I'm really excited about the way that the offense can conform to his strengths.
Mm-hmm. Surround him with shooters.
The athleticism that he has is unlike a guard's athleticism that Villanova has had for years. Again, nobody is lauding Justin Moore or Colin Gillespie as being the most athletic guys out there. Even Brunson and Archie Diacono never fit those crazy athletic molds. They were obviously supremely talented, but what Armstrong can do in driving to the basket is pretty unique. And the distinction you made is a very important one, because he deserves the keys to the program. And I think we'll get into this a lot more on next week's episode, but you got to make sure that he is absolutely up to par. And I hope that they're able to game plan around him to take advantage of what he can do even more than they did this year.
Yeah, I'm with you. You're looking for bright spots. We all are. He is the brightest of the bright spots going forward.
Yeah. I'll mention one more thing. It's funny because I would consider Villanova's performance against Liberty another defensive meltdown, the second straight defensive meltdown.
Ooh.
But on paper, maybe this was a little bit of a recency bias decision for me. It wasn't that bad. They only gave up 62 points to a pretty good offensive Liberty team. That's only the third time this season that Liberty has scored less than 62 points. So that should be a check in the box for Villanova. It just felt like at times they just completely checked out on defensive assignments. And again, something that we had been giving them so much credit for down the stretch of the regular season was being so up to par on the switches, and the communication was so much better on defense and focus, something we've talked about with Alan Ray this season. It was just so on point, and so many guys got lost. And yes, you can attribute that to Armstrong, Hausen, Arch playing more minutes than they usually did. And I don't think Armstrong and Arch have necessarily been labeled as the defensive liabilities all season long, but it just felt like a little bit of a disappointment again after Creighton, seeing how far this defense mm-hmm. went towards the end of the season.
Yeah, so I think what's going on for you there is that the gaping disasters on defense are just burned into your mind with yeah. the wide open threes off of just like awful switching and not coming over
Dixon
to cover.
Dixon having to guard Darius McGee.
Just yeah, things like that. Overall, I think defensively they played fine. It's just there were some really, really bad moments in this game that Liberty took advantage of, it felt like, at every swing. For me, it was the opposite, and it's just it all came down to the offense here. Mm-hmm. And if you needed one game to sum up the offensive struggles and the disconnect in philosophy and execution of Villanova, and you need to put it into one game this season, it would be this one. They went 4 of 26 from three. I don't need to harp on what I think about the offensive approach around threes. I think you guys have heard that 1, 2, maybe 3 times this year, and it really showed through in that NIT game. And the one that just really bothered me, 8 assists from the team in the entire game. Just for a fun little comparison here, 8 assists in the entire game for Villanova. That's the amount that Tyler Kolek averages per game for Marquette.
Oh, that's not fun, Pat. Yep. That is not fun.
So, of course, Kolek, one of the best passers in the country, the best passer in the Big East, but that's how many assists Villanova had. And they were dead last in the conference in assists per game this year. They were below Georgetown. And I think that shows, as we start to think to our episode next week and we talk about future Villanova and things we need to see change, would like to see change, they have to find ways to get that ball moving more and be able to facilitate shots for each other, because there were way too many instances this season, and it happened again on Tuesday, where guys just have to try and figure things out one-on-one, get to the basket and try and score. And as we see, it just puts you in really difficult opportunities against competent defenses, and Liberty most certainly has a very competent defense, and it was a struggle for Nova to get to the basket that way.
Yeah, it's talking about the same weaknesses that we talked about all season long, except for the last month. Or it's exhausting to talk about. It's exhausting to hear. That's why I don't have that much to add.
Nope, I'm not going to harp on it.
Right. They shot far too many three-point attempts and made far few in all three games. The Georgetown game, the Creighton game, and this Liberty game. The thing that really grinded my gears was the inability to get to the free throw line.
Yes.
7 attempts against Liberty. It was in that same region against Creighton. It's just inexplicable to me.
Tied for the Liberty, lowest amount of free throw attempts this year. They've done 7 twice. They did it against Xavier and Xavier in early January, and Marquette on New Year's Eve. And then they did 7 again on Tuesday, which that's not good enough for a team that needs help offensively. Very frustrating.
Creighton, I can justify, I guess, a little bit, because you don't even want to tempt Kalkbrenner down low, and Creighton's mm-hmm. got some size. Liberty has no size. They're one of the smallest teams that Villanova's faced all year long. It was the perfect opportunity for guys like Dixon and Slater to exploit that, and they didn't. Dixon had 2 free throw attempts. Slater had 0. Slater had one of his best offensive games of the season, obviously, but it was such a strength. Villanova, again, finished the season as the best free throw shooting team in the country. And besides that Seton Hall game where they won at the line, there are few and far games in between where that was really used as a strength. And it is truly inexplicable and unjustifiable to me why that wouldn't be the go-to answer, especially when your leading scorer in this game, the guy that you need to rely on to score offensively, was 2 for 15 and 0 for 9 from 3.
Yeah, it's been an issue all year. Villanova, like, once they get to the foul line, they make their foul shots. The issue is that they didn't get to the line enough this year. You think a year ago, it felt like they were consistently shooting between, like, 17 and 23 free throw attempts a game, and that just was not the case here. If you look at some of the leaders in free throw percentage and then check out the free throw attempts to go with it, Villanova is way below a ton of them. They did not get to the line enough this year to be able to take advantage of that.
Definitely not. And I think it's easy to say, like, oh, they don't have a guy like Gillespie or Moore, mm-hmm. who was actively playing, who's so good at
goading defenders into fouls.
Right. At penetrating the paint. And exactly. But they have Caleb, who's done that before and watched guys do that before him. They have a Slater. I think Armstrong has even learned enough under this tutelage to be able to do those things. And they still didn't. So that is something that I hope that Villanova keeps of all the potential changes that we'll see in the Villanova system next year. I hope guards being able to do that down low to try and get themselves to the free throw line is something that stays, because that is what that's what sets Villanova apart from other programs and what makes them so good in the postseason, because they can win in a lot of different ways, and they can also win when they're not shooting well. And when you take that away, it's just a lot of not shooting well. And that amounted to a lot of losses this season, much more than usual.
Yeah, you could say that. That's another thing, is they finished at 17-17 here in year one with Kyle Neptune, which stinks, because I really wanted them to finish over 500. That's why I just wanted the one win in the NIT to guarantee the over 500 finish. Instead, they're going to finish directly at 500. But that is now your measuring stick going forward, and you hope it's only up from there. I want to hit on the two seniors playing in their last game, because I think that's important. And it was, of course, a very different performance for both of them. I think Brandon Slater really did himself proud to close out his career. And I don't just mean against Liberty, you know, over the last couple games of the regular season, and especially in the postseason, you saw him step up. And just to look at that, including the Big East tournament, as well as the NITs, averaging 15 points a game over that three-game span. Obviously, very small sample size, but when they needed him the most, he did step up here. I look at Slater, and it's been talked about many times how he is such a great example of the Villanova developmental process from when the guy first came in. I mean, just think about this, and look how crazy this is to think about. In his first 2 years at Villanova, he shot 12% from three. From his junior year on, which were 3 years, he shot 36%. That is he tripled his three-point percentage from his first 2 years, then to his final 3 years. He became an integral part of what this team did defensively. He became an emotional team leader for them, and I'm very, very proud of Brandon Slater and the career he put out there. I know this year wasn't what we wanted for him. We thought he could take, and he should take, another step forward now that the spotlight was on him, and that didn't really happen. But that said, he still closed things out strong, and I will most certainly look back in a positive light on Slate.
Oh, absolutely. We were, I think, leaps and bounds the most critical of Slater this season because we had such high expectations for him. I think he's going to be, similar to Jermaine Samuels, one of those guys that we really miss when he's not in the program. And even if that's not the same defensive and offensive impact that Samuels had, from a leadership perspective, and I feel this way about Caleb Daniels too, Villanova doesn't make that Final Four run last year without either of those two guys. Slater specifically, some of my favorite Villanova recent memories involve Slater, whether it be a timely dunk, that timely free throw in the St. John's game at the Big East tournament last year, a hammer that he always throws down to get the crowd going.
UConn block.
True. He has some seriously unbelievable Villanova moments. And I'll always remember John Rothstein. I think it was the beginning of last season when Slater had that crazy offensive stretch, by stock in Brandon Slater, because it's just going to keep going up. And it was really cool to see him incrementally and then exponentially get better every single year. He is the quintessential example of players getting better in Villanova's program. And that's really cool.
And then on the flip side, I honestly just, I feel terrible for Caleb Daniels.
I just wish he hadn't played, to be honest with you.
I know. I think a lot of us do with that. And it's hard to say that, because I can say personally, I know we usually don't let on to this a little bit, but, you know, I did cover the team while I was at Villanova, and Caleb may have genuinely been the nicest, most genuine player that I covered over my 4 years there. Just such a great guy. So it always stings when you have to go out and say the things that we have to hear. And I mean, Tuesday night was a disaster, and it was just such a disservice for him to end his Wildcat career this way. And he really struggled, especially in the second half of the season. And I totaled it up, you know, since February, he shot 30% from three. And a lot of that came from, I believe, two games where he was really hot from three, and then the rest of them were pretty ice cold. We know it was a absolute disaster against Liberty, where he ended up finishing 2-for-15 from the field and 0-for-9. You know, Caleb Daniels had really held such a nice role for this team since coming in from Tulane over the last couple of years. But to go out in the way that he did here, I mean, straight up, it just sucks, because it was really rough.
It leaves a bitter taste in your mouth. And honestly, down the stretch of these last few games, it just sinks to end such a long career that did that brought so much good to this program. I saw a couple threads on Twitter today debating whether Eric Paschal or Caleb Daniels had a bigger impact on Villanova. And I don't think you necessarily have to even answer that question for it to show how much both meant to the program. So,
wow, that's an interesting. I would go with Paschal there, but I appreciate that Caleb's thrown in there. It's fun to put the transfers in.
I think accomplishment wise, it's hard to pick anybody besides Paschal.
Yeah,
like the hardware he has, but
he's a legend.
Man, a lot of big moments also had Caleb in it, and some big shots. And I think it's you can't forget the last few games that happened here, and I don't think it's unfair to wonder what this team could have looked like if Caleb was as hot as he was at the beginning of the season, but that's not what happened. And yep. I think generally we can look back on his long career at Villanova and think that it was incredibly positive.
And we will talk much more about looking back and looking forward next week.
Yeah, I'm excited. So I brought the positivity, Pat. You have anything else to say about this game before I switch over here?
I appreciate the positivity because it was a rough watch.
No, it was
Tuesday.
Tough.
Yeah. No, the best part of Tuesday was finding out that Ted Lasso season 3 has dropped on Apple Plus, or Apple TV. So I cannot wait to get into that. We could all use a little hope and a little believe right now.
Seriously, anytime the Villanova scores in the 50s, it's usually never a very good night. And anytime it's on ESPNU, to be honest with you, or ESPN Plus, whatever it was on, it was a little rough. But let's switch to the bracket because I think there is a lot of reason to be optimistic and excited about the Big East specifically. Just run through it quickly. Creighton's in the South region. They are up against number 11 seed NC State in the first round. Two teams in the East, 11 seed Providence going up against Kentucky, which is obviously the Bryce Hopkins revenge game. And then Marquette is the 2 seed going up against my grandpa's Vermont Catamounts.
Catamounts,
the 15 seed. Marquette is becoming a very trendy Final Four pick, which
I'd
love to see. UConn-Iona, 4-13 game in the West region. And then you've got Xavier versus Kennesaw State, who beat Liberty in the ASUN championship game in that Midwest region. Is there a matchup that's sticking out to you right now? And honestly, you can't say UConn-Iona because that's the easy answer.
I mean, yeah, of the first round matchups, like that matchup is gold. That is the matchup of all of them on Thursday and Friday I am most excited for. I cannot wait for that game to tip off. And I will normally be supporting the Big East in many ways here through this tournament. I will basically be an Iona alumnus on Friday.
UConn's
watching
the
that
one
game.
Team that the rules don't apply to.
Especially
I literally said that
me.
Today. That's so
yes.
funny.
Yes. So I cannot wait for that one. Otherwise, matchup wise, I mean, the most fun game will be Providence and Kentucky. Mm-hmm. If I can't pick UConn, Iona, just because of the seeding disparities there, you know, Cooley Calipari, Bryce Hopkins going up against his old school, all the rumor swirling about Cooley. It's definitely an intriguing matchup. Now, I do not feel good about this for Providence, just understanding that the stretch that they are on right now. But if I have to pick a matchup and I can't pick UConn-Iona, that would be the one I would go with.
Yeah, I actually, differently from you, I know that you're going to say I'm biased. I think Providence has a chance. I think Kentucky, the streakiness that we've talked about with some teams in the Big East is nothing compared to the streakiness that Kentucky has showed.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they're I think they're pretty much healthy and they've been playing better of late, but I think Providence is a tough out. And I think with all the concern, rumors swirling around Cooley, so much chatter with the amount of intensity and energy that Bryce Hopkins is going to bring to this game. I think because they crashed and burned so spectacularly down the stretch of the season in Providence, we forget how good of a defensive player Devin Carter is.
Yeah.
And how good of a shooter Noah Locke can be. And how good of a team effort this team can play defensively. So I think they're going to give Kentucky a run for their money. And I actually think if they can beat Kentucky, they have a chance of making it to the second weekend because I'm not very high on Kansas State. And I have them beating Montana State. So Providence, Kansas
too.
State,
yeah.
I also kind of like Providence in that matchup. So I'm looking at that one, too. I like Marquette. The only Big East team I have losing in the first round is Creighton. And it's honestly
really?
More so because I think NC State was horribly underseeded, I should say. They had some key wins in ACC, and I think they got totally screwed.
I have Creighton in the Elite Eight.
Really?
So, yeah, I have.
Wow.
Yeah, I went a little Big East crazy in mine. I feel Yeah, I know, right? I feel good about I have three teams actually from the Big East in the Elite Eight, I believe.
I have Xavier and Marquette.
Yes, I have Xavier, yeah. Marquette, and then Creighton was my fun little spunky pick because I was going through my bracket and realized I had too many ones and twos and threes around there. So mm-hmm. a six as I started going down the seed line and in that region as well, they made the most sense to me. So
you like them over Baylor and Arizona?
I do. I think wow. Baylor, I haven't seen the consistency from them this season that I think there is a chance there. And Arizona's got some injury issues. I just think Creighton, when they're firing, are incredibly dangerous. Yeah. So that's why, and it's more, again, I'm going for a little diversification in the bracket, and they just happen to be the team that I felt the best about that were a lower seed.
No, I can appreciate that. When Creighton's on, obviously, we saw it very recently. We know that what they can do. I just think if you eliminate Kalkbrenner from the equation and you have an off shooting night from any combination of Alexander, Kaluma, Nemhard, or Shireman, they're very easy to beat.
Oh, there's no doubt. Absolutely.
I don't think Marquette and Xavier really have any weaknesses right now. We saw Xavier get smacked by Marquette, but
yes,
they are extremely good. And if Sule Boom plays 0.25% better than he played in that championship game, same with Colby Jones, Xavier's going to be just fine. So yeah. I'm excited. I'm excited about potentially a Xavier Texas matchup to get into the Elite Eight.
Elite Eight.
And Marquette versus Duke, Purdue. There are some good options there. That's a fun reason. I think
the Big East is going to have some good matchups if they win their first few games.
No, I totally agree. And people are saying that West is absolutely the strongest region because UConn is in it. The Kansas, I have Gonzaga winning it all in my bracket. I think whoever comes out of the West is going to win. Kansas, wow. UCLA, Gonzaga, UConn. Those teams are unreal.
And the West is never this stacked. It's usually never. You know, the East or the South are the top regions just based on, you know, where a lot of these schools are located here. The West, with how they built it, is just a juggernaut. And that region is going to be an absolute blast. So what do you see so I've now thrown out that I have three Big East schools in the Elite Eight, which of course is never going to end up happening. But hey, that's what I went with. What is your outlook for the other Big East for the Big East schools that we haven't touched on?
Providence and UConn, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm high on Providence. I think I always try and see the ceiling for them. And I think a lot of other people see the floor. And I think they need one of these wins to
just say I see the floor next time. You don't have to.
Yeah, I'm adding you specifically, Pat, and your dad, honestly, too. But no, I UConn was honestly one of the toughest. There are a few matchups that I just left totally blank for about a day because I just couldn't decide. I think they get past Iona. But I'm really high on St. Mary's, to be totally honest.
As am I.
And I'm high on Kansas. I'm high on Arkansas. There's just a lot of different styles in the West, which I think makes it really fun. And again, nobody wants to play UConn ever when they're going right. I think it was a quote in The Athletic. Some anonymous coach said that UConn's undefeated stretch in non-conference play was the best stretch a team has looked in college basketball this season.
I mean, they were crazy in November.
That's a big deal to say, and they were probably that good. Mm-hmm. So when they're like that, when Jordan Hawkins is going, when Andre Jackson is going, when Adama Sunogo is going, fine. But sometimes they just don't show up. And that's why I feel like there's a chance that they get bounced early. But I also hope for the sake of the conference, for the sake of erasing the narrative that the Big East doesn't perform in the NCAA tournament, a lot of these teams can make it to the second weekend. That'd be sick.
It'd be a lot of fun. So I'll definitely pull in that way. I have Providence losing to Kentucky in the first round. Of course, you probably could have guessed that with me. And then I have UConn getting past Iona, but I have St. Mary's taking them down because I St. Mary's as a five seed is tough. Yeah. Also, VCU as a 12, like, that stinks for VCU and drawing St. Mary's. They're a really good team. If you haven't watched them out of the A-10, make things very difficult on teams. That is a tough draw against five St. Mary's. So it is what it is. But that's how I'm looking for the Big East. I have high hopes. Will it happen? Yeah. Who knows? It's March Madness. None of us know. We just have some fun with it. So
I think my biggest miss of this bracket, and I'm nervous to even say it, but hopefully this is the anti-jinx here. I have all the fives making it. I don't have a single 12 upset. And I know that is the cardinal sin. I know that you should be picking basically two 12s and one 13. I do have a 13. I have Kent State beating Indiana, and I like it a lot.
You're not a Charleston fan, huh?
No, I don't. I just think they're so trendy. And
they are.
They're going to get so cold, and I like San Diego State. I liked Furman. Maybe I'll change my mind and pick Furman over Virginia. But yeah, that's my biggest nerve, my biggest sensitivity so far. I have all the fives. I'm hoping it's the year of the fives. You have any of those that stick out to you?
I have Charleston winning in as a 12-5. Okay. But otherwise, I do think the five seeds are pretty solid this year. And then do you want to move into Final Four national champion?
Let's do it. You go first.
My Final Four is Alabama, Houston, Marquette, and UCLA.
Mm. Okay, so I stayed up until 1 a.m. last night basically stressing over UCLA.
Because it is stressful because Jalen Clark's out. And if he was not out, I'd feel so good about them potentially winning a national championship here. I still pick them to get to the Final Four because I love Mick Cronin, though he is such a huge blow for them.
Yeah, I was going to ask you to sell me. I think this is the year of the guards, and you would be hard-pressed to find a better guard duo than Jaime Jaquez and Tiger Campbell.
Yeah.
But I also would have picked UCLA. I honestly think I would have picked UCLA as my national champion if Clark hadn't been hurt. And Bona got hurt in the Pac-12 championship. I feel similarly about Houston and Marcus Sasser because we just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And without him, they got crushed by Memphis. So I get that that's one game. They still got a lot of strengths without him. But because of those two unknowns, I have Alabama, Marquette, Texas, and Gonzaga.
Okay.
And I have Gonzaga over Alabama in the championship.
Oh, so this is finally the year for Mark Few, huh?
I think I like the fact that they're a little bit underrated. Their offense is better than it's been in previous years. Again, I think they're coming out of the toughest region, so they'll have their work cut out for them. But like I think Gonzaga over St. Mary's, if that's what it ends up being. Gonzaga, I think, can beat UCLA at lower strength because that defense is significantly hampered by Clark's absence. Mm-hmm. I like Gonzaga. Again, experience and coaching wins matters in the tournament. And Drew Timmy is 40, and Mark Few is just a few years older than him, so that counts.
Oh, totally. No,
at least 40. Maybe 45.
I agree. And then for me in my national championship, I have Alabama going up against Houston and Houston taking it home.
Nice.
If you've listened to me, you know I'm a little stubborn and I may carry a grudge from time to time. In November, I told you Houston was the best team in the country. So nice. There's no way that as a one seed, I'm changing now. So I've got Kelvin Sampson, Houston Cougars cutting down the nets in their home city.
That's pretty cool.
Here in about a month.
That's one of the underrated storylines is that Houston could win it basically at home there. I feel similarly about Houston as I felt when you picked Marquette for the Big East to make it far. Like, they're the obvious pick that nobody's picking because they're not on a biggest stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not Alabama or UConn or Gonzaga or UCLA.
Duke
or any
is
of
a
these
fun
big
Final
teams.
Four
Duke,
pick right
oh
now.
My God, yeah. Purdue, even, who I think a lot of people will bounce early, but Texas is another really popular one. Kansas, even. If Houston has Marcus Sasser, they're going to be a huge out. I still maintain that Villanova's win over Houston, that was the final, the Elite Eight last year.
Yeah.
That was one of the most surprising wins that Villanova has had in a long time. Because I
so
thought
such a great
was
win.
A phenomenal team.
And they were. They were. That was a huge deal. Not only, of course, get to a Final Four, but just the pedigree of opponent there. And then we know that Houston, you know, brought back so many players and adds Sasser. So, really, really talented team. And that's why I have them as my champion. But,
I'm so excited. I think there's the chance for so many upsets. But I think when it comes down to it, you're going to see a lot of ones and twos, which some people like, some people don't like. Yep. I still think there's going to be enough chaos to make everybody happy. But I just can't wait for it to get started.
And Villanova will not rip our hearts out this year in the NCAA tournament. So
it's nice to have some just clear-headed, just watching for the fun of it.
We will take that as a positive. And I know we just spent, 15 minutes or so going through the bracket. And I'm sure absolutely nothing that I said is going to end up happening.
Oh, yeah.
But
I'm positive about that for me, too.
It's part of the fun, right? So, but it all starts, as you guys listen to this, on Thursday today. Of course, goes into Friday and then Saturday, Sunday with second round action. These are the best 4 days of the year in college basketball for me. I know some people really love the Sweet 16 into Elite Eight weekend, but there is nothing like this opening weekend for me. And I am so, so pumped. By the way, St. Patrick's Day too on Friday going into it.
Yeah, it's a big weekend.
Oh, yeah. What a couple days. This is going to be good stuff.
Yeah, the every 45 minutes on Thursday and Friday doesn't get much better than that for me.
Yeah, it is going to be awesome. And before we wrap up, another disclaimer and reminder, those Villanova women are playing at the Finneran Pavilion on Saturday at 5 o'clock in an NCAA tournament game against Cleveland State. Really excited to watch that game. And oh, by the way, earlier today, Maddie Segrist was announced as a first-team All-American because, of course, she was the first in Villanova women's program history.
Duh.
Yeah, exactly. National Player of the Year. That's what I'm waiting for next. Come on, do the thing.
That's awesome. I was really surprised, I guess isn't the right word, but it's crazy to see that she was the first in Villanova women's history. That's pretty awesome.
It is pretty awesome. So go support them on Saturday. But all right, that'll do it for us here on the State of the Nova Nation podcast presented by VU Hoops. Be sure to check out VUHoops.com for all your Villanova content all season long. Follow this show on Spotify, subscribe to us on iTunes, and follow us on Twitter at SONNpod. Everyone, it is March Madness. It is NCAA tournament time. Just enjoy the games. Try and take a step back and relax. I know Villanova, of course, season ended on Tuesday. It just gives us the opportunity to watch these games without our hearts in it. St. Patrick's Day on Friday. Big weekend at the Finn on Saturday. Let's do it. We'll be back at it on Tuesday. And Nova Nation, that's a wrap.